Welcome to My Health and Wellness. This music is just making me happy. I want to put it out there. A couple things before we start the show today. I want to let everybody know Corinne Johnston has her new show started airing this week on talklansing.net and myentertainment.biz. And it's a show where a bunch of women get together and we talk about different issues. Really a lot of fun every day from 7 to 9 a.m. on talklansing.net. So big shout out to Corinne on her new show. I also want to tell everybody I'm so excited. On Monday, when I was with Corinne on her show, I was talking about a new company to me, not a new company to the general public, called Angel Food Ministries. And I have talked to them, and they have agreed to come on the show. So I'm really, really excited to have that coming up. And I also wanted to let everybody know that past guests, the Lansing Area AIDS Network, have been on the show. They are our feature columnist for the new issue of Kesozo Living, which is now on the stands. Really a great article about AIDS awareness. So for today's show, we are hoping to talk more about nutrition and help everybody make better decisions. And joining us for today's show is Lisa Howard, who is a food coach, culinary speaker, and recipe developer. And she is also the owner of The Cultured Cook. So welcome to the show, Lisa.
Glad to be here.
I'm glad to have you here. You know, when I was talking with Corinne earlier in the week, we were talking about food labels and how confusing they are and what does it even mean and are things really on there. So, you know, I'm just wondering, what do you tell people in learning how to read a food label?
Well, this is a great question because it is the most important tool that you need to have when you go to the supermarket to start looking at things. And I usually go a little bit counterintuitive, and I tell people, ignore everything that you see except for the list of ingredients because, and I'm sure we'll get into it, most of the things that you see on the front of the package don't actually have any kind of legal backing or third-party certification. So the best bet is to ignore the frustration, just look at the ingredient label itself in terms of the list of ingredients, and also remember that the best stuff doesn't even have a label on it because that would be fruits, vegetables.
Right. What do you mean when you say legal backing or third-party certification?
Well, the word organic does mean something in the sense that third parties do go in and certify, yes, you're running an organic operation, which is to say that if you're growing a crop, you're not fertilizing it with sewage sludge, you're not using genetically modified organisms, and if it's a case of an animal, then you're not treating that animal's antibiotics, and you're not feeding it GMOs, genetically modified organisms. So that word organic does mean something, but words like natural, that doesn't have any kind of legal standing at all. Words like pure or light or anything like that, they don't mean anything.
Exactly, and that's exactly what we were talking about is that, you know, and I'm sure we'll talk about this later in the show, but the packaging, it's quite the draw to get you in to have you buy the food without actually understanding what's in it. And I love it that you open with the ingredients because half the time when you read the list of ingredients on a food label, you can't even pronounce them.
No, you can't. That's a good sign to just put it back on the shelf. It's the easy way, you know. If you can't understand what it is telling you, it's kind of like you're trying to talk to somebody and you don't understand what they're saying to you. Maybe you want to find another conversation that you can engage in. So maybe you want to find another food that actually looks like it's food, you know.
Like real food.
So that's why I tell people, save your time. It'll get frustrating if you stand there and try to read every single word on the package. By the time you get to the good stuff, the ingredient list, you'll be tired of reading and you won't want to keep going. So just save yourself the hassle and save time. Skip everything except the ingredients list.
Okay. So let's break down some of the more common things that we're used to hearing about. I think what happens is that we hear, you know, you don't want to have too much fat, you don't want to have too much cholesterol, but when you're actually in the store and you're reading a food label, they give the percentages and things, but is there an easy way to remember how much is too much fat?
Well, I'm not really into the numbers game, which is kind of how I think of, I think a lot of it's marketing schemes used to get us to buy the product, you know, market as low fat or zero.
Right.
So I'm not, and I think Americans in general focus a little bit too much on numbers rather than what the thing actually is. So I'm not really in the camp that focuses on what is too much in terms of arbitrary numbers. In terms of fat, I would say for me what's important is what type of fat is it. So is it a refined fat or is it a natural fat, which we'll call, you know, unprocessed fat. So in the case of a processed refined fat, that would be something like vegetable oil, which has been highly processed, highly refined, It's been heated to such a degree that it turns it rancid, and then it has to be filtered, it has to be deodorized to become acceptable to the consumer. So when you see that bottle of oil that never seems to go bad, that's because it's already been highly processed, and in many ways it could be already considered bad.
Okay, Lisa, that's disgusting. The thought of heating it to the point that it goes rancid and then it has to be deodorized?
Absolutely.
Yikes.
Absolutely. And for more about fat, The Facts About Fats by John Finnegan is a fantastic resource. But when you compare an oil like that, which is a refined processed oil, to a fresh oil such as an extra virgin olive oil, which legally means extra virgin does actually mean something in the case of olive oil, it means that it has been filtered under, it's been pressed under cold conditions, away from light, away from heat, so that it retains its properties. It retains its nutrients, its flavor, its aroma. It retains the oliveness of the olive versus, say, a soybean or corn oil, which is usually going to be your vegetable oil type of thing because they're cheap commodity crops, and so those are easy to purchase and process.
Right.
So when you compare those two oils, you can even take a refined peanut oil and compare it to an unrefined peanut oil. And as a consumer, we can easily tell the difference because if you open a bottle of refined peanut oil, you get nothing. You know, there's no hint of peanut. If you open a bottle of unrefined peanut oil, you better hope nobody has a peanut allergy in 50 yards because, I mean, it's so peanutty.
Right.
You know, so the proof's really in the pudding. The unrefined oils usually are darker color. They each have an individual hue to them. Peanuts are kind of like a brownish red. Extra virgin olive oil is anywhere from golden to green, depending on the olive. Whereas the refined oils are all kind of uniformly the same shade of yellow.
Yes. So, yeah, and that's very true. They all look the same.
Right. They all look the same, and they all smell the same, which is like nothing, whereas the unrefined oils smell like what they are.
Okay.
So, that's my take on fats would be more, I'm not so concerned with is it saturated or not, or what is the number or not. I'm concerned with is it refined or not.
But you would say trans fats, absolutely not.
Oh, absolutely. That is a refined fat by definition. Trans fats, absolutely refined and processed. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, the trans fat, you know, thank goodness, has gotten a lot of coverage, you know, in recent years and stuff, and, you know, even with some states, you know, banning it. So I think that's a good step in the right direction.
Yes, although for your listeners, I'd love to point out that when something says zero on the front of the package, like it says zero trans fat, legally speaking, it can have 0.5 grams or less per serving and still put zero on the front of the package.
Well, and that's a topic that I want to talk about when we get back from the break, because I think a lot of these labeling, it really says zero or none, and that's not at all what it means. So
Correct.
We'll talk about that when we come back from the break.
Okay, sure.
All right, everybody, we'll be right back.
Relationship, a word that can mean compassion and connection. We know relationships make the world a better place. From family and friends to an entire community, they can help form the basis for becoming all we can be. At Hayes Green Beach Memorial Hospital, relationships are at the center of everything we do. With our passionate local health team in Charlotte and deep connections to extensive health resources elsewhere, we provide one essential relationship you can always count on. Experience our trusted relationships, strong capabilities, and high-caliber physicians, and let HGB help make your world a better place. Hayes Green Beach Memorial Hospital, bringing us together in health. Discover how at hgbhealth.com.
Sun's up, it's a little after 12. Make breakfast for myself.
Welcome back, everyone. You are listening to My Health and Wellness on the MIE Radio Network. And we are talking today about food labels, how to understand them, how to get a little smarter in your food choices with Lisa Howard, who is the owner of The Cultured Cook. So, Lisa, before the segment break, we were talking about how when you look at food labels, sometimes it will say non-fat or indicate that there is nothing of an item in it, and there actually is. So can we talk a little bit more about that?
Absolutely, yeah. We were saying that by legal definition, a product can put zero trans fat on the front of the product and in fact actually contain 0.5 grams or fewer per serving of trans fat. So the only really surefire way to know if something has trans fat in it or not is to look at that list of ingredients, because if you see the terms hydrogenated or partially hydrogenated, then that's trans fat. And one of the recent terms that the industry is starting to use, because they're kind of realizing people are catching on to the word hydrogenated, is interesterified is now a new process for transforming fats. So interesterification process. There hasn't been a lot of study done on it yet. It's very new, but that does seem to be something very close to a trans fat. So, it, you know, for my purchasing, I do avoid products if I ever see that word as well. So if I see anything about hydrogenated or interesterified, I do put that product back on the shelf.
Can you say that word one more time, Lisa, because I'm not sure I'm getting it.
It's interesterified.
Okay.
Because ester is the type of fat, or it's a type of fatty acid, so it's interesterified.
They
and then
do
the other
same
thing I want to mention, too, with the low-fat and non-fat issue is that non-fat and usually low-fat, by definition, in current practice, also means high sugar. So when you look at yogurts, for example, the less fat the yogurt has, the more sugar it's going to have.
Okay.
Because you have to do something. When you take away fat, you're taking away a major flavor carrier. You're also taking away a lot of mouthfeel that we like. We like that rich, creamy mouthfeel. So when you take that out of a product, then you have to replace it with something. So typically that's going to be replaced with thickeners, stabilizers, chemical additives, and sugar.
Yikes.
So, or some sort of sweetener. So for my way of thinking, I avoid non-fat products. I try to avoid low-fat products. I would rather eat less of a full-fat product that's going to have fewer additives in it and just be truly the Fahe yogurt, the whole milk yogurt that they sell is wonderful. It's milk, cream, and culture. That's it. So I would rather take that and eat less of it than get a non-fat variety of yogurt that's going to have a ton of sugar and stabilizers and thickeners in it.
Well, and that's part of why I wanted to do this show, because, you know, when you go and you actually look at what are supposedly the healthy options for foods in the store, it in a lot of cases, it really just breaks down to the packaging of
it
and
really
labeling
does.
Of it.
It really does, and it breaks down to these so-called value-add type of ingredients that are value-added for the industry but not for the consumer, because that's what a lot of people are now trying to avoid, you know, mm-hmm. the chemical additives. And in the case of, you know, another good thing to do with milk, I always get whole-fat milk. And what you can do, rather than paying someone else to water down your milk, you can water it yourself and save money. So you could buy a half gallon of whole-fat milk and then save a gallon container, fill the gallon container with your half gallon of milk, and then fill the rest with water, and you've got, you know, 2%.
Wow. I'm going to out myself, Lisa, and I'm going to tell you I'm not a milk girl. So just the thought of, like, pouring water in your milk is just really unappealing to me.
Yeah, I don't really drink milk as much as I like to bake with it, but, you know, I do run into a lot of people who, you know, they do have really a kind of a psychological problem with drinking, like, a whole-fat product or
right.
using a whole-fat product. So usually that's what I'll suggest, because that's a way to save money and get a better product.
Right,
you know,
right.
why pay somebody else to water your milk?
Wow, I've never had this conversation, I'm going to tell you, Lisa. Let's talk about cholesterol, because I think that's another thing that people really are watching. What does it mean when it says reduced cholesterol or low cholesterol? What does that mean?
Well, legally speaking, if a product says low cholesterol, it contains fewer than 20 milligrams per serving. So there actually is kind of a meaning to the term low in that case. But again, with cholesterol, I think cholesterol all comes from animal sources, so plant foods do not have cholesterol. So the only time that we're thinking about cholesterol is regard to animal products. So again, I'm kind of on the quality kick with that as well, what we were talking about earlier. So to me, it's not as important what is the cholesterol count in that item. It's what kind of item are we talking about. So let's compare conventional beef with grass-fed beef.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting when you compare the two, because if you do it ounce for ounce, if you focus on quality, i.e. grass beef versus conventional, that quality approach absolutely solves the quantity approach, because the grass-fed beef has half of the saturated fat than the conventional. And I'm not sure exactly how much the cholesterol count compares, but I'm sure it also has less cholesterol, too. So, you know, by focusing on the quality of the animal product, you're going to also necessarily lower your intake of fat and cholesterol.
So for grass-fed beef, there's less than half of the fat than a conventionally raised cow?
It has half the amount of saturated fat.
Saturated fat.
Correct, yes. Because it's the same where if you have a human who is allowed to freely go exercise and eat a diet that suits his body, versus you have a human who's forced to sit on the couch and eat nothing but corn and soy all day, the human on the couch is going to be a diabetic, overweight human. The
right.
human out exercising and eating, you know, a variety of great vegetables and fruits and grains and meat and everything is going to be healthy. And it's the same thing with the cow. If you force the cow to go against its nature and not get to move around and eat things it shouldn't, well, it's not going to be a healthy cow, and it's going to be an overweight cow and a fat. And that's what it is. It's purposely done to fatten them up.
Right. I don't know if you saw the show. Lisa Ling did a show on going out to one of the feedlots, and the person from the feedlot was telling them that they keep the cows in these pens for three, so that they'll gain 3 pounds per day. And then
Absolutely.
Once they reach a certain amount of pounds, then that's when they're,
right.
you know, taken to slaughter.
Right. Right, there's a slaughter weight that's required, and this is why grass-fed beef is going to be so much more expensive than a conventional one for many reasons, but one of them is because if you allow the steer to freely wander and do his thing, it takes him, it takes twice as long to reach that kind of, you know, slaughter weight, and even then it's not going to be as heavy as the purposely fattened version.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got a bit more cost involved in raising the animal because it's going to live longer, you know. So this is part of the reason why it is more expensive to go with the better, more natural, you could call it more naturally raised animal products. So,
well, let's talk about that natural bit a little bit, because you see natural all over the labels at foods in the market. And really, that really doesn't mean anything, right? They don't have to make any kind of claim to claim natural.
No, there's no legal standing for that. Now, you know, it may very well be that the farmer, you go to the farmer's market, he's selling eggs, they're marked natural. It's very well, may be that those are free-range eggs, but it's not to say that it may mean what you hope it means, but there's no legal requirement that it would mean that.
Mm-hmm. Now, what if they said all natural? Is there
no legal requirement there either. The only legal requirement is going to be the word organic.
Okay. And organic, remind me again, organic means actually what?
In the case of animal products, it means that the animal is not fed genetically modified foods. The animal is not given antibiotics or hormones.
Okay.
It does not mean, now here's the interesting point about organic labeling, though. It does not have anything to do with the animal's lifestyle. So in the sense of, it does not mean that the cow is out grazing on grass.
Oh.
It does not mean that.
Okay, so
all
that cow means, that is organic could have been fed corn.
Absolutely, but it will be organic corn.
I see. Okay. What about organic fruits and vegetables?
Sorry.
That's okay. What about organic fruits and vegetables?
Organic fruits and vegetables are not sprayed with pesticide or herbicides. They are not fertilized with sewer sludge, and they are not going to be genetically modified organisms. So I would say, actually, that probably organic produce means more what we hope it does
mm-hmm.
than organic animal products.
I'm going to go back to that fertilized with organics or with sewer sludge. Is that actually a process that happens?
Yes, in conventional crops, yes.
I'm taking a moment to just not be able to recover from that. I've never heard that before. That's just a little shocking to me.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those little known things. And actually, originally the USDA was going to allow that to be used in organic production, but consumers like you and I protested so much when they were setting up the organic rules, I think it was back in the early 90s, I believe, that actually that was taken out of the allowed item. So, you know, that just goes to show that you and I and everybody else out here, all the consumers, we have a lot of power when it comes to food.
Yeah, and we really do, you know, and that's part
of
why I'm hoping that this show will help so much, because I think that people are so much smarter than they used to be in terms of choosing their foods. But I think the fighting the labeling and packaging trends, it can make it very, very confusing for people. So this is really helpful, I think, to help people be empowered when they go shopping.
Absolutely, and that's what I'm all about, is helping people feel empowered and do something about it. Because the more we vote with our fork, I mean, Michael Pollan's famous for saying this, the more we vote with our fork, the more we're going to get what we want.
That's right. All right.
We're willing to shift our budget and spend a little bit more on and better quality animal products or organic produce, then, you know, more of it will become available, and probably the price will start to come down.
That's right. All right, when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about gluten. So we'll be right back at My Health and Wellness. Welcome back to My Health and Wellness. We are talking today about food labels and how to understand what you're looking at when you go to the market. And we are joined by Lisa Howard, who is the owner of The Cultured Cook. Lisa, you know, as I shared during the break, I'm still not really recovering from the whole sewage from the last segment, but I want to move on. We had a show. I'm really trying to get over myself. We had a show recently with Gary Merrill, who was talking with us about gluten intolerance. And I know that gluten is one of those things that a lot of people are looking for. How can people be smarter at the market if they need to determine if gluten is in a product?
Well, there is one little bit of good news lately, although this doesn't completely address the problem. But at least now the top 8 common allergens are required to be clearly listed on labels. So now it has to say contains milk, contains wheat, contains soy, contains corn, eggs, so on. So at least now we can clearly see the word wheat on there.
Wow.
That's helpful because now instead of it being hidden as a form of, say, vegetable starch or something like that, now it has to say wheat. So and wheat is the big place where you're going to find gluten in products. So there is that to look for. But the thing is that gluten is also found in barley, rye, and oats that have been cross-contaminated with wheat, barley, or rye. So you also have to be aware to look for those items. So, for instance, barley vinegar, malt vinegar made from barley.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's made from barley, and that's not gluten-free.
Okay.
When you look at soy sauce, that is typically traditionally brewed with wheat. So you can get wheat-free soy sauce, just look at the label.
Mm-hmm.
Readily available, but you do have to watch out for that. So in terms of looking for gluten in products, that can be a little bit tricky, but the big thing to look for, and not everyone goes and does the certification for it, but this is another rare case where a label means something. If it actually is certified gluten-free, and it usually has a little mark on there in a corner somewhere, kind of discreetly on the package, and it'll actually have the stamp, just the way you see the organic stamp as well on things,
mm-hmm.
That has been certified as gluten-free. So that's a good thing to look for. Not all products, though, are going to have that stamp because maybe they didn't pay to be certified, and
right.
Many may, in fact, be gluten-free. So you really have to, and those who are intolerant or celiacs or sensitive, I'm actually a sensitive person myself, we've gotten used to the fact that we really have to read the ingredient list.
Right. Absolutely. And I tell you, I was telling Gary, too, when we did that show, that I'm so encouraged by the number of restaurants that are now listing, like, gluten-free recipes, and there's a lot more options out there now for people who are sensitive.
Right. And when I develop my recipes for my website, I always do it both ways. I offer both gluten and gluten-free and then wheat version. So, yeah, it's because it's becoming easier and easier to make that tweak and that transition
mm-hmm.
because, you know, a lot of people are under the mistaken assumption that the word flour means wheat. No, it doesn't. Flour is anything that's fine and ground up.
Oh.
So you can make flour out of almonds. You can make flour out of chickpea. You can make flour out of millet, which is a grain, but it's not a gluten-containing grain. You know, you can make flour out of potatoes,
mm-hmm.
corn,
mm-hmm.
all sorts of things. So, in terms of, and we're starting to see these more on shelves, so now you can, if you go to a well-stocked, say a Whole Foods or a well-stocked natural food store, they are probably going to have millet flour, teff flour, quinoa flour, almond flour, and now you can actually just, you know, make your items with those things or focus on those instead of buying wheat flour.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about frozen food. So, again, I'm outing myself. So when I'm really busy or whatever, I'll get frozen foods, and, you know, Amy's is a big line that is listed as organic, and there's some, you know, there's a lot more frozen meals that are kind of tailoring themselves to that market, where if you need to eat something frozen, you really don't want it to be chock full of all kinds of stuff. But
right.
What's your take on that? You know, I know that the best thing is to eat fresh fruits and vegetables, but if you're on the run and you have to eat something that is frozen, when you look at these labels, how do you even tell?
Well, there's definitely a place for frozen things and all sorts of preserved things. And Amy's is a good recommendation on that. That line does a better job, I think, on frozen items.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say that the best kind of frozen food that you can have on hand, freeze your own leftovers.
Mm.
Because you've got it anyway. It's free.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then you know what's in it. So that's what I do for myself quite a lot. you know, if I have too many, I freeze the leftovers. So I think that's my number one recommendation for frozen foods. Because I think most of us, we have leftovers at some point. You know, you make an extra big pot of chili or spaghetti or something like that, you've got leftovers, you can freeze it.
Right.
But certainly Amy's is a good one. And a lot of things that are in the frozen section are really good options, like the frozen produce. You know, maybe not so much the prepared meals, but you can get all sorts of frozen vegetables that you can easily make into a stir fry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of those Asian mixes will come with carrots and peas and water chestnuts, maybe bean sprouts or something, and you can just literally dump the bag in a frying pan and spend maybe 5 minutes or so sautéing it, and you have a meal with it. So vegetable mixes are a good choice. I'm even seeing brown rice now in the freezer section.
Yes, I have too.
Yeah, which, you know, you put that with some vegetables, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of pre-cut meats now. I don't know how many of them are going to kind of fall into the more naturally raised category of meats, but I think some do.
Right.
And you could add that as a protein, or you can open a can of tuna to add as a protein to something, or cheese.
What about canned goods? Are there things on the ingredient list that are less bad for you than others? I guess that's the way I'll put it.
Well, a lot of people have concerns with, you know, the sodium content can be pretty darn high on canned foods.
Mm-hmm.
So for people who have to watch that, that's a concern. Probably the biggest concern now, and there are some good soups, like organic soups that are canned, and they're actually really nice soups. So again, it's kind of a matter of comparing, you know, pick up a couple labels and start looking at the ingredient list.
Mm-hmm.
But probably the biggest concern people have nowadays with canned items, I'm hearing, is the BPA issue.
Yes.
And the good news is that Eden Foods, which is a Michigan, actually, company, and they source quite a bit of their produce comes from Michigan farms, they pioneered BPA-free cans years and years ago, way before anybody was even talking about it, because the owner and founder felt that he didn't want his family to eat BPA lining, and so he didn't want his consumer, his customers, to either. So he voluntarily made the switch years ago. So the Eden line of canned items, and they make soups as well, and, you know, beans and sorts of things, those are BPA-free. So,
Lisa, in case there's anybody listening who doesn't understand the BPA issue, can you cover that briefly?
That's the BPA stand. I think it's polyphenol. I can't remember what it stands for, but it's used in the production of in the lining of cans to protect and preserve. But the problem is that recent studies have shown that that can interact with your body's hormones, especially in developing infants and younger people. And it's used in the creation and manufacture of plastics as well. So there's been a big push to get BPA out of baby bottles, for example. Those are molded plastics. So there people are saying it's an endocrine disruptor. There's a lot of research going on right now, but there isn't really a firm, concrete agreement yet, but a lot of people are of the opinion, well, hey, let's, you know, since we're not sure, let's not go there, so let's stay clear. So a lot of people are going with BPA-free cans.
Right, which I think is a really smart choice, you know, especially when it comes to the baby bottles, and, you know, that was a huge, big scandal of, you know, the sloughing off of the BPA into the actual, you know, drinking water or whatever.
Right. Exactly, and especially if you heat it, you know, and some people will even heat cans sometimes, not too often because most people realize, let's not put metal in the microwave, but, you know, if you heat a can of something, then you're even more likely to make that leach.
Mm-hmm.
So the only thing that you can't actually, tomatoes are still not allowed to be canned in anything but BPA cans because apparently the tomatoes are so acidic that they break down and make everything else leach anyway in the linings, no matter what you use so far.
Wow.
So the only thing that Eden makes that's not BPA-free is the tomatoes because, I mean, everybody has to do it that way.
Where are they located? Do you know, Lisa?
No, I don't know the exact town, but they are certainly in Michigan, and they make some of the they do straight-up canned beans, and they do it with sea salt, by the way, instead of, you know, standard table salt. They use sea salt and a little bit of seaweed in their canned products, which gives a nice flavor and a bit more nutrition.
Wow.
They are located, the can says Clinton, Michigan. So,
oh, yeah. Okay. Well, we'll give them a big shout-out then, because that's just wonderful.
Yeah, definitely. And they also do already made, you know, beans and rice in a can, too. So it's not just straight beans. They also already offer some seasoned varieties that you could easily just open up and have for dinner, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
They're great. They taste wonderful.
Well, one of the things that I want to talk about, which just gets me going, is this whole thing with genetically modified foods. But I want to pick that up when we come back from the break because that's definitely a topic I could talk about at length. So let's take a break and we'll come back and talk about genetically modified foods and a few more things with Lisa Howard.
To take you out of this place, someone you could lend a hand in the turn for grace. It's a beautiful.
Relationship, a word that can mean compassion and connection. We know relationships make the world a better place. From family and friends to an entire community, they can help form the basis for becoming all we can be. At Hayes Green Beach Memorial Hospital, relationships are at the center of everything we do. With our passionate local health team in Charlotte and deep connections to extensive health resources elsewhere, we provide one essential relationship you can always count on. Experience our trusted relationships, strong capabilities, and high-caliber physicians, and let HGB help make your world a better place. Hayes Green Beach Memorial Hospital, bringing us together in health. Discover how at hgbhealth.com.
Welcome back to My Health and Wellness. Today we have been talking about how to be a smarter person at the food market and understanding some of the food labels and other issues with our foods. And Lisa Howard has been talking with us and helping us be smarter people. Lisa, if people want to get a hold of you for more information or your services, how can they reach you?
Probably the best way would be to go to my website, which is www.theculturedcook.com.
Okay.
Or you can send me an email, and that is lisa@theculturedcook.com.
Okay, great. Yay. Okay, so before the segment break, I kind of alluded to the fact that I can gnash my teeth to powder over genetically modified foods. To me, it is such a short-sighted approach that we've taken here in the U.S., but I want to hear your opinion about it, because I really, it is one of those soft spots for me.
I totally agree. And, you know, one of the my number one irritants in the GMO category, and that's genetically modified organisms, is canola oil.
Mm-hmm.
Because canola actually started out as a plant called rapeseed, which, not surprisingly, was not, you know, really catching on with the public, so it got renamed. But rapeseed oil started out as a lamp oil, a lubricant. It wasn't edible. And then in about, I think it was in the 70s, some Canadian scientists tinkered with it and made it more edible to humans. And it was Canadian, it's canola, so it stands for Canadian oleic acid. I forget the exact designation, but canola is a made-up name to describe its attributes after it got re-engineered. So a lot of people cook with canola oil. You know, you see it a lot in recipes all over the board, but at least 75%, the last I read, the number was at 75% of the canola crops genetically modified.
Oh my gosh, I never knew that about canola oil.
Yeah, and most corn these days is genetically modified,
yes,
as is most soy. You know, you're talking at least 70-75% of the crop.
Yeah.
So those are kind of your big, but the good news is if you avoid processed foods, usually soy, corn, and canola are used in heavily processed, and cottonseed oil in heavily processed foods. So if you start shopping more around the perimeter and you know, avoiding that, then you kind of get yourself out of that situation.
Well, what do you think of the whole thing, though? You know, I don't understand the position we've taken where we are not requiring genetically modified foods of any kind to be labeled so the consumers can know if they're eating genetically modified foods or not.
Well, there is one area, actually, and this is a really handy tip I'm going to pass on here. In terms of produce, when you're looking at produce, you know, fruits and vegetables,
mm-hmm,
they all are required to have a number label on them. So, like, when you look at an apple, it's going to say 4131.
Mm-hmm.
That's produce code for an apple. An orange says 3107. That's produce code for an orange. And they all have four numbers. Now, if they have a 9 in front, so if they're five numbers and they start with a 9, that is an organic produce.
Oh.
If they are five numbers and they start with an 8, that is a genetically modified produce.
Really?
Yes. So, for instance, for lunch I had an apple, and it happened to be an organic apple. So the apple code is 4131. My apple said 94131 because that's an organic apple.
That is quite the handy tip. I had no idea.
Exactly. Whereas the orange I'm going to have for dinner, it's just the standard orange. It's not modified, but then again, it's not organic. So the orange code is simply 3107. Now, if that were an organic orange, it would be 93107. If it were a genetically modified organism, it would be 83107.
Okay. That is very helpful, because I'm telling you, this is not the first time on the show I've discussed this issue, because I can't stand it. You know, if you go to other countries, they have clearly identified in their labeling that you are eating a genetically modified salmon.
Yeah, more so in Western Europe. Western Europe has been far more touchy about this whole topic of genetic modification a lot longer than we have. We're starting to get touchy about it now, but yeah, Western Europe has been really in the forefront of stop. You know, they're more traditional foodists. But yeah, no, but there is an easy way to tell with produce. Just look for that number on there.
Okay.
If it's four digits, it's conventional, which is, you know, neither here nor there. It's not modified. It's not organic. If it's five digits and it starts with a 9, it's organic. If it's five digits and it starts with an 8, it's genetically modified.
Okay. Yeah, that is very, very, very helpful. I appreciate that.
Right.
All right.
And now, and as we said earlier, if you're talking organic animals or organic produce, either way, but now we're moving to animals here, then that means organic is not genetically modified. So if you're looking at a chicken, it says organic chicken, not genetically modified.
Okay, so if it's an annual product and it's clearly marked organic, then there is no way that it could be genetically modified.
Right, and I mean, actually, you know, the chicken is not going to be genetically modified as itself, but that means it's not fed food that is genetically modified in the case of the animal life. You know, they're not fed GMOs.
Mm-hmm,
more
mm-hmm.
in the case of, because I don't know, I heard rumors that, you know, they're trying to re-engineer salmon to be able to eat corn. Don't know if that's been done yet or not.
They're in the process of it, because I caught wind of that, and I thought, oh my gosh, you know, like we get one of these GMO salmon, you know, loose in the stream.
Right, so we may one day see actually that the animal itself or the fish itself is a GMO. As of now, it just means they're fed that. But, so, you know, if it says organic, you're good. So it's a little bit, it's not too bad, although I do agree with you that usually if you're looking at a processed food with a lot of ingredients in it,
mm-hmm.
it's not really required to tell you if it is or isn't.
Mm-hmm.
Genetically modified. Now, usually if a manufacturer is sourcing good ingredients that aren't, you know, if they're organic ingredients, they'll put it all over the package. You know, that's a selling point. So they want to make it clear to you this is organic.
That's right. That's right. Well, and I'll tell you, I first started looking at food labels more. I needed to get sucralose out of my diet. And so I was amazed, you know, a lot of sports drinks and all kinds of waters and stuff.
Oh,
you
vitamin
can find
water,
this,
that Glacier vitamin water. You
that's
know,
right.
That Coke. Coke owns that.
Right. Yeah, it's really shocking. Once you start really paying attention to the labels, you don't have any idea how much, like high fructose corn syrup everywhere. You know, it's in ketchup, it's in, you know, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, everywhere.
What do you think, okay, so are there other tips that you give to your clients that empower them to become better shoppers when they're at the market?
Well, here's an easy one, is anything, when you're looking at the ingredient list, anything that ends in O-S-E is a sugar.
Oh, really?
So like you mentioned, sucralose.
Mm-hmm.
So anything that, lactose is a sugar, that's the sugar in milk. Fructose, that's the sugar in fruit.
Okay.
Anything that ends in O-S-E is a sugar.
Wow, that is helpful.
Yeah, and that's an easy thing to remember. So that way when you're looking at, especially say, cereal or granola bars or yogurt, which I think are my three most frustrating category, and salad dressings, those are my four top gnashing of the teeth items for me. You know, when you start to look at the ingredient list, look for things ending in OSE and start adding them up. Now, there are a lot of sugars that don't end in OSE, and there are a lot of sugars that are natural sweeteners, like honey.
Right.
You know, so I'm not saying that all sweeteners are bad. I'm not saying that at all, but I do advise people, you know, keep in mind when you're looking at cereal, granola, or yogurt, start adding up how many kinds of sugar there are in it, because you may realize that what's done now is you have to list the ingredients in order of descending amount. So, you know, the thing that's the most has to come in front and tapers down the list. So what a lot of manufacturers have done now, rather than saying milk and then sugar and then vanilla and then something else, they may have milk and then maybe the fiber can manage to make it second, but then they've got five kinds of sugar split five different ways that are going to come next in descending order, so they're not as far towards the front as they used to be.
Oh,
but
I see.
Collectively, though, if you add them all up, they're going to be the number one ingredient.
Okay, so if there's a mom out there shopping and she sees a label that says sugar as the first or second ingredient, she knows enough by now that is the primary ingredient in that. But now the manufacturers have started splitting up those sugar types so that it doesn't seem that it is as much, right?
Right, exactly. So, and especially, you know, and I hate to say this, but especially the organic type cereals do this a lot, and granola bars, because And they'll use more natural forms. They won't use high fructose corn syrup, but they're still putting in honey and fructose and grape juice and date sugar and, you know, and they'll put in so many ands of different kinds of sugars that really, if you add them all up, that would be ingredient number one.
What if something says it's like whole grain?
Whole grain is it better than not saying anything whole grain? I'm not aware of what that would mean in terms of, you know, grams per serving, but I do see a lot of cases where it may say whole grain on the front, but again, the proof's in the pudding, so you got to look at the back and read the ingredient list, because if you see the word enriched, legally, the word enriched means that that grain was processed and stripped apart. Most of the nutrients were removed because most of the nutrients are in the germ and in the bran. And to make white flour, that stuff's all taken out. And then only some, and it's mostly B vitamins, only some of those B vitamins are put back in. Not all, just some. And that's what enriched means. So
wow.
When you see enriched flour, and then in parentheses it'll say thiamine, riboflavin, those are actually B vitamins.
Okay.
Thiamine and riboflavin are B vitamins that have been added back in partially. But I don't think that the word enriched, you know, it makes it sound like it's a good thing. But if someone steals $50 from me and then hands me $10 back, I'm not enriched. I'm robbed.
Right.
I'm missing $40.
Right.
So anytime you see that word enriched, what that really means is robbed. Because it means it's missing some of the original nutrients it had.
Right.
So when you see something, they say whole grain on the front of the package, but if you flip it over and you look at the ingredients label, maybe the first ingredient actually is whole wheat, but then maybe number two is enriched.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not a completely whole grain product then. Maybe it has some whole grain,
right,
but not what you're thinking it's going to have.
Well, Lisa, you have made me so much wiser today. I so appreciate it.
Well, thanks.
You really have, you know, you've it's a complicated issue to feel like you can understand and stuff, and you really had some good tips to help people at the market. So I really, really appreciate you being here.
Well, thanks for inviting me, Christina. I enjoyed it.
All right, everybody, we are done for today. Come back next time, and we will be talking more about food.